The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima.
Peter, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Hey, good morning, Ken. How are you?
Doing very, very well. First off, there was a lot of hubbub yesterday about the jerseys, and then things took a turn because there were a couple of reports that there has been talks about OBJ possibly to Minnesota for a second and a fifth round pick. I don't know maybe what you might know about that in particular, but should we be surprised at all that there would be conversations about moving Odell Beckham Jr. from the Browns?
Well, first of all, I don't know. I really doubt that it's true, but I don't know categorically whether it is true. So that's really about all I can say about the veracity of it. I think the biggest point when I first heard this is that, man, the Vikings are really struggling with the cap. And no matter what you think of Odell Beckham Jr.'s talent, he's a risky acquisition, you know, because he's just not the kind of stable guy that you can definitely count on. You know, he blew up the place with the Giants. He's had his moments in Cleveland. And, you know, to me, I think if you're going to take on that contract, you have to be really confident you're going to be able to handle Odell Beckham Jr., the person. And if the Vikings take on the contract, this would not just be a 2 and a 5 or whatever the compensation would be for Odell. This would also be a lopping off of a pretty good player, or you know, a bunch of contracts getting redone. So the cost would be high for Minnesota. I think the Vikings are likely to sit right where they are and to draft a receiver fairly high. This is one of the best receiver drafts of all time. And so that's just my gut feeling. But again, no one on the inside of either place. I've not talked to anybody on the inside of either place to know that for sure. It's just one of those things that seems like it's probably not going to happen.
Peter, when any of his teammates talk about him as a teammate, they say positive things. They said positive things back in New York, with the exception of maybe Eli Manning. Do we sometimes get a little too crazy about that stuff with Odell? We know he's emotional, but it seems like people do have positive things to say about him.
True. My point about Odell Beckham Jr. has always been that there's always some stuff around him. You know, there's always some stuff flying in the air. Everybody has the right to live their lives the way they want and to be the personality they want. But there are some teams that just don't like it. The Giants didn't like it. And look, the Giants have the worst record in football over the last 3 years. So, you know, who's to say that they're doing it right? Who's to say the Browns are doing it right? My feeling is that he is a very high maintenance guy, and he's a very good player. We all see that. But I would, you know, if it were me and I were the Minnesota Vikings, I would not want to trade for Odell Beckham Jr.
Peter King, join us on the hotline. What are you hearing when you reach out to organizations around the NFL about what this draft will look like and how different this draft could look because of the obvious limitations?
I don't think it's going to be as one hand tight behind your back as most people seem to think it's going to be. Now, some quirky things might happen. Some team might get a pick in late because it, you know, overestimated how quickly that they can get a pick in. I don't know. I'm not saying it's going to go off without a hitch, but you know, really, when we think about it, you know, in this particular case, teams are smart. I had one team tell me that, hey, look, if you've got the 68th pick in the draft, you know that you've got 7 minutes in that period of time when you're on the clock to make a trade. So you're not waiting until you get to the 68th pick in the draft to start engaging teams. Because the biggest problem that I see right now is the fact that, look, I have no idea how Andrew Berry is going to divvy up how he's going to talk to teams around the league. But I had one team say to me that, look, we're going to inform teams that your first contact has to be with X if you call about a trade. In other words, don't call our general manager directly. We're going to, you know, we're going to put all our trade negotiations. We're dividing the league up into four groups of eight teams. And if you want to talk about a trade at our pick, you call this person first and he'll tell you what we're thinking. And then if it gets far, you'll go to the general manager. And it's not any way of trying to, big dog any team. It's just simply a way of trying to say essentially that, you know, we've got to do this in a different way this year because we're not all in the same room. I talked to, you know, the Saints last week, and I think they're going to do a pretty ingenious thing. They're going to have all their scouts on one, whether it's a Zoom or Microsoft Teams, you know, screen. And Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis and Jeff Ireland, the assistant GM, are going to have access to that screen, but they're also going to have a separate screen where those three guys and the cap guy will be on the screen constantly discussing as though they were in the same room. When they need to talk to somebody on the other screen, they'll transfer on their other computer and talk to people on the other screen, which is how most teams do it. You have all your scouts in the room or very close to the room, and if they want to talk about a certain player, they will. So I just don't think that there's going to be the kind of difficulty with this draft that originally a lot of general managers thought there might be.
Peter King joining us on the show, NBC's Football Morning in America. Follow him on Twitter, @Peter_King. Yeah, you're trying to make some people feel better about it. You know, John Harbaugh was losing his mind about it there, Peter. But, no, there's a lot of good stuff in that. And it just, for Browns fans, it always seems like, oh, gosh, what crazy thing is going to happen during this type of draft. I want to ask you, though, about, you know, I can't ask you to speculate on what's going to happen in the fall. I can't do that. But say under these circumstances, say they're able to get together, they're able to have a training camp, a preseason, a regular season, whatever, with fans, without, that doesn't matter to this question. How much does it hurt a team like the Cleveland Browns, who have a first-year head coach, a quarterback coming off a lackluster year going into a pivotal year three, and a team that is still expected to make the playoffs by their own management, that they won't have really an OTA or mini camp going into this season?
Well, there's a lot of teams in the exact same position. And look, the good thing for the Browns is that Kevin Stefanski, is a calm teacher. And I think that is going to hold them in good stead because they'll get an awful lot done in these virtual sessions. You know, I'm assuming that all of their key people are going to be involved in these virtual sessions. And they all should be, and not just Baker Mayfield, but all of their key people, on both sides of the ball. But a lot of teams are going to be in the same boat. How would you like to be Cincinnati taking a quarterback with the first pick in the draft with all the incumbent pressure with taking a quarterback with the first pick? Because obviously you expect them to start opening day. You're almost certainly not going to have any kind of off-season program except on a laptop. And then there's a chance that training camp is going to be delayed, and who knows what training camp will look like. And then you got to play opening day. Who knows if they'll even have Joe Burrow play opening day if indeed he's the pick. Yeah. So there's a lot of teams that are going to be in the exact same position. And that's why, to me, man, it's hard to imagine teams like, when you look at teams that have so much in place from last year and who were so good last year, New Orleans, Kansas City, San Francisco, Seattle, so many teams that are not changing very much, really, I think, are going to be at a huge, going to have a huge advantage in 2020 when the games start, whenever that is.
Peter King, join us on the Hotline Football Morning in America, always a must-read every single Monday. So what are you hearing when it comes to how the league is planning on having everything done when you're hearing things in California like they don't see mass gatherings happening for who knows? Could be 6 months, could be another year. We've heard plans rolled out for baseball. I haven't heard anything when it comes to what the NFL truly wants to do.
Here's the things that I'm hearing. I reported a couple of weeks ago that it wouldn't surprise me if the NFL, when they announced their, one of the reasons why, you know, the NFL would be in fine shape to release the schedule as they normally do, like today. You know, there's no question in my mind that they have a playable schedule that Roger Goodell would approve, because this is the week that they always announce the schedule. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was the Thursday, either the Wednesday or Thursday before the draft last year, that either 8 days or 7 days before the draft that they released the schedule. And I believe that one of the reasons, a very big reason why they didn't do it, is that the NFL will try to either put all six division games for every team in the last 12 games of the season. I'm not positive that that's going to happen, but I know that that's something that they have to consider, because if the league has to, you know, contract its schedule to either 14 or 12 games, you know, I think there's a feeling around the NFL that the one thing they would like to do with the schedule is to be sure that all the division games are played. So I believe the NFL, when they announce their schedule, May 7, 8, 9, whenever it's going to be right in there, when they announce their schedule, they will have two schedules in a drawer somewhere, in a virtual drawer. One will be a 14-game schedule, perhaps with a bye week. One will be a 12-game schedule, both with and without a bye week. If you think about it and if you do the math, you could still play the Super Bowl on time if you start the NFL regular season, a 12-game season on October 18th. So that gives the NFL almost a month and a half longer before they'd have to play games. Now, I think the one other thing that most people would be really concerned about is, you know, whether there would be fans in the stands. You know, the first game of the NFL regular season is less than 5 months away, and that is September 10th. The Kansas City Chiefs would host that Thursday night game. I just simply can't imagine in our country that in less than 5 months, it would be, it's foreseeable that 60,000 people can gather and celebrate, you know, for 3.5 hours together, a Super Bowl championship team. So, look, I think we have to get our minds set to maybe not believe, but to basically know that it's very possible that there's not going to be fans at football games for either some or all of this year.
Peter King joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I have to ask you about Myles Garrett coming back in 2020. He'll be able to play week one. Do you agree with that? What went through the decision-making process with the NFL on that decision as well?
I think they saw that a guy had a brain freeze. He's a good guy. He's done a lot of good on and off the field in his career. And to me, I think it's the NFL basically saying that, you know, this is a heinous thing, and if he ever does it again, there's a chance it's probable we'll never allow him on the field again. But I think that was at the basis of their ruling, that if he had had a history, if he had had a trail of things that he had done wrong, then the NFL would have been much tougher on him. But I think they were tough on him as it was, you know, in basically taking away 40% of a season. But I think the punishment did fit the crime, and I think he can move on and should move on now with, you know, knowing that he's got it in the back of his mind he can never do anything like that again.
Real quick, scale of 1 to 10, what'd you think of the new jerseys from the Browns yesterday?
I like them. I mean, I had written something in my column Monday that it was they were going to be going back to the traditional jerseys, traditional uniforms, and I think they look good, and I think the most important thing about them is that they just seem to fit the Browns a little bit more. You know, the jerseys they put in 2015, I mean, it's just a uniform. It's not the biggest thing in the world, but just didn't seem to fit the Browns. It was like the Steelers had jazzed up their uniforms. You know, that's one of those things I just don't think you need to do. And I thought the marketing aspect of what they did, in terms of basically saying, hey, look, this is just like the jersey the Jim Brown wore, basically, is great. And I also think that everybody who buys a jersey and who's going to, because obviously whenever a team puts out a new jersey, a lot of their fans rush and buy it. X number of dollars, whatever it is, let's say $10, is going to go to some person in Northeast Ohio to help fight COVID. COVID-19, especially to benefit the people on the front lines. If for no other reason, that's a great reason to change your uniform to try to raise money for an incredibly important cause. So I thought that was good on the Browns.
Read him, NBC's Football Morning of America. Follow him on Twitter, @Peter_King. Peter, we can't thank you enough for the time. All the best to you and yours. Stay safe, my friend.
Hey, my pleasure, Ken. All the best to you, too.
Yes, sir. Peter King on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We'll be back. We'll break down some of that. Mary Kay at 825 on The Fan.